You're listening to The Skeptic's Guide to the Universe, your escape to reality.
Hello and welcome to The Skeptic's Guide to the Universe. Today is Friday, December 18th, 2015, and this is your host, Stephen Novella. Joining me this week are Bob Novella.
Hey, everybody.
Kara Santamaria.
Howdy.
Jay Novella.
Hey, guys.
And Evan Bernstein.
Good evening, folks.
So this is our 2015 year-end wrap-up. This is our 10th wrap-up, I guess,
our 10th
episode
wrap-up
that we're doing, yeah.
We get to this point of the year quicker, it seems, every year. The years are getting shorter to
That's because we're getting older, Evan.
Yes. I suppose there's some
byproduct to age.
What is that, Steve? Is our cerebral cortex, like, shrinking? What
I don't know.
No,
time sense?
Yeah. What I read is that imagine you're 6 months old. When you think about a month, that's you
a
know
sixth
a sixth of your entire life. That's a huge chunk. Whereas when you're 80 years old, if you think back a month of time, it's just a tiny little slice. So that kind of alters our perception, making it seem like it's just going faster and faster and faster.
There is also something called telescoping. You guys ever hear that term? We have a tendency to contract our memory of things in the past. So if you think something feels like, you know, it was 4 months ago, it was probably 8 months ago. You probably just rule of thumb double however long in the past you think something was.
Like your baby. I was like, that was like a month ago, right?
Yeah.
And she's 3 months.
Yeah, that's about right. Yeah, 2-3 months. Mm-hmm.
Sure, it seems longer than a month to you.
Yeah.
Well, slept in three
months.
Yeah,
look at this face. Do I look like a well-rested, healthy man? Yeah.
So this is the year that we look back upon the best and the worst of the year of just science and skepticism and the SGU. Of course, the big thing to happen this year for the SGU was, of course, Kara. Kara, you joined the show this year.
Yes,
it was huge. Not often that a new rogue joins the panel.
Nope.
That was my biggest moment,
I would say,
probably.
Oh, yeah.
Well, of course. Biggest moment.
So how's it been? It's been, what, since it was 6 months, right? Because it was July.
Yeah. And the funny thing is, this is the first time I've seen you guys in person since that day that we made the announcement.
Right. We were obviously at TAM together.
That's right. We were at TAM.
And
right.
So everything else has been remote until now. Right. The gang
Until
is back
now.
Together.
And that seems like 2 months ago to me.
Yeah, exactly.
That's about right.
And we see you on Skype all the time.
Yeah, that's true.
We live in a virtual world now.
We do.
Physically present.
This is the first time I've been wearing pants since we podcasted.
It's good to know.
Yeah.
What's weird, though, after working with you now for many, many months, I just feel like I've just known you my whole life. Doesn't feel new anymore.
I like, you're already bored with me. You're ready to trade up.
Comfortable.
Gotcha.
The shine is off.
Comfortable.
Exactly.
Well, what I recently learned about you is that you could do a spot on North Dakota accent. Fargo.
It's from the Fargo conversations
Fargo.
We've been having.
So good.
So
I can't
good,
help
yeah.
it. It's like the longer you watch it, the more it
Go ahead.
I don't know. I've got to hear it for a while first. And then it's, because you know what? It's not that like, I think a lot of people make it too intense, but it's really just kind of barely there. It's just kind of barely
it is. It's
there.
From what I've read is that the Fargo accent is like the extreme regional accent.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, but
there are people who talk that way, but not most of the people.
No, most people, it's just a little hint of it right there.
Yeah.
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 Right. Yeah.
That's good. I like that. That's good.
I like how they throw the word then at the end of a lot of sentences.
Don't you know then?
They do.
So
yeah.
He's dead then.
That's funny, so true.
I love it.
That's right. That gives the show a lot of flavor. All right, so let's start off with the most amazing science news items of the year. We actually touched upon it a little bit on last week's show because we had Phil Plait on, and he told us that his favorite astronomy news item was Pluto, which Bob and I actually agree should be also just a just science item of the year. I mean, the fact that we completely explored, with a flyby, but still we got incredible images of a dwarf planet. We went from blurry images to very, very high res images, and we found that it was extremely interesting.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
Right. Extremely interesting.
This is the third zone of the solar system. This is the only part of the solar system that is wholly unexplored. And this was the first example of detailed observations of something in that field. You know, Kuiper belt, scattered disk, and then Oort cloud. This is the first time we've really got a close up. So this is something like Steve, you mentioned that. There's only one first time. We'll never have such an unexplored zone of our solar system again.
Yeah.
And on top of all that awesomeness, the fact that it was such a fascinating dwarf planet with so much variation and so much detail that it just made it, to me, it made it headed above the best.
And this was 10 years, more than 10 years in the making since actually the launch of the probe. We had to wait and see. And
launch was 2006.
That is insane.
So much can go wrong in that amount of time. Everything really has to be perfect in order for this to have all lined up.
I remember when it woke up, you said, oh yeah, it's working. That's awesome. It didn't get destroyed by some random you know, rock.
Imagine if that had been a manned mission. Mm-hmm. A humaned mission, I should say. A personed mission. How long they would have just been in space. Just hanging.
Think about
waiting.
How long that
space
guy's beard would have been.
I know. It's just crazy. They're going
to send women to avoid that problem specifically.
That's it. You're right.
Think about how long that woman's beard would have been.
There'd be no beard. There'd just be a rotted corpse with radiation damage. I mean, that's
true. Ah. So ignoring the obvious.
Radiation damage, that.
What I like is that I got to become intimate with this other celestial body that you know, we knew was there. What is it? It was just a name to us. We didn't know much about it. Small, like I always kind of thought of it as purpley colored
for
like some
reason. It's like a blurry marble, you know. Now it's a world. And we can add that, so like when I think of Mars, I think of Mars.
Yeah.
When I thought of Pluto, I thought of a smudge. Now I think of Pluto.
And we know for certain, though.
For me, it was an ice ball, of course, right?
Yeah. Most importantly, we know Cthulhu does not live on Lisa.
Well, we haven't detected it yet.
Did we see the whole... A 360 of the planet?
No. Only one side. It had to fly by one side, Let's not forget, we also rendezvoused with the another dwarf planet.
Yeah, this was definitely one of the top.
Yep, and the bright spot was a mystery.
Mm-hmm. It was.
And then they found out it was a rave party that was going on for 1,000 years.
They did not invite us.
Yeah, of course, somebody out there said, oh yeah, it's an alien civilization lit up.
Of course, it must. What else could
but
it be?
But it's just, it's ice. Yeah. It's bright.
Reflection.
I mean, it's interesting. It's very, very interesting. But it's a natural formation. A little bit. Yeah, the surface is a little more of a typical cratered moon.
Yeah, it's
looking,
more moony. Yeah.
But it's got that. Yeah, that really that bright spot. That was an interesting mystery.
It's more moony.
Yeah,
it's more moony.
Say that.
Moonish.
Yeah. It's very moony. Feeling very moony.
Funny, it doesn't
today.
Look moonish.
And of course, we rendezvoused with a comet.
Oh yes, we did.
So that and we landed on.
Yeah, that was the hard part.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Yep. Also, it looks fake.
Yeah.
Doesn't it look fake? Looks like CG.
Yes, really? You would not necessarily say, well, that's
definitely
a
composite.
It probably is a composite, but either way, it's very fake looking.
And the composite
it looks like an MRI of a comet.
Well, you know why? Because it's epically stark. It's light or dark. That's it. It doesn't have a lot of tone in it.
All right, let's go. Let's start from the right and work our way left, Evan. Do you have any votes for your favorite news item of the year?
A science news item. Well, one that certainly intrigued not only us, but I think the rest of the internet. It almost broke the internet back in February. Was the quandary over the color of a certain dress?
that was very good.
And I didn't really think that this. I think this one was worthy of mention because it's not so much a science item. I think it's just because everybody had an opinion on this one. So this one was a big, big story for the year, and it did lead to some very interesting discussions, including on our show.
Yeah. Oh, what I love about this is that it sort of smacked everyone in the face with, you construct what you think you see.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's totally constructed. And, to you, like, my daughters, I think, both thought, that's gold and
white.
Gold and white.
How did you not know?
As you can see. As you can clearly see.
So you looking at this photo right now see black.
Black and blue. It's black and blue.
Still blows my mind. Even though I know what the dress looks like and even though I've seen like other photos, it's like, look, it's black and
blue. It's objectively black and blue.
It's so white and gold. I can't convince my brain to see black and blue.
No, you can't because your brain's constructing it a certain way, and that's what you see. You can't control that.
It's so insane, though.
It is insane.
It's just that's not black and blue.
It makes me angry to think that you're not seeing the color blue right there.
If somebody's wearing this dress and committing a crime, and they asked you, hey, what was the perp wearing?
I would say white and gold.
You would have given one person or another would have given a wrong description of the garment that the criminal was
wearing. Which happens all the time.
Right.
Right. So, that's again, people think it's insane. No, how you can't possibly see that. Of course you can. It just confronted people with the reality that your perceptions are constructed.
Yeah.
And once you accept that, really own that knowledge, this is like, of course, you see that it's weird, but it's, this is every day.
I think what's frustrating, though, is that you can't. I know people who, during this phenomenon, would like look at it in different light. Oh, I see it now. And then it would like switch back and forth.
Some people are on the edge and they switch back and forth. I've never seen anything other than black and blue.
I've seen both colors.
I'm solidly in the white and gold.
I cannot see white and gold.
Solid gold, gotcha.
So crazy.
Right.
It makes me crazy.
that's part of the reason I chose
it. What I love about it is that even though you might know the science very well of why that's the case,
it still shocks you and surprises you.
So it's
kind of like having your cake and eat it too, because you can enjoy it, but still experience that visceral reaction. Because we live
day to day with the illusion,
right,
that what we see and hear and experience is real, and when in fact it's just a construction or an interpretation of what is real, and you can't access reality. You can only access your brain's construction of reality.
And Richard Wiseman does great jobs of illustrating this all the time with his blogs and his video demonstrations and his live presentations. I mean, that's really
But this
what
did too, and it went viral.
This was right in that sweet spot.
You know, like going on what Steve said, like I'm actually a lot thinner. Like it's just your brain that's screwed up.
Well, you have three cameras on you. Each camera's 10 pounds.
There you go. 10 pounds.
Thank you.
What do you got, Cara? Anything?
Oh, what do I have? I really liked the new hominid that was discovered.
Yes.
Homo naledi. Was that right?
Naledi.
Yeah. In the cave. In Naledi. Yes. Exactly.
Homo naledi. The two women had to crawl through.
There were so many cool things about this story because it was, anytime we find a fossil that's not objectively one thing or another, and it kind of confuses scientists and makes them rethink the way that they categorize things, I think that's always really interesting. Makes everybody stop. Anytime you see a lot of tension in the scientific community of people in certain camps saying, no, this is very much X, and these other scientists say, no, it's very much Y, and that's based on all of the years of research that they've been doing. It's fun to see them sort it out.
Yeah, absolutely.
The great thing about this, though, that I think really distinguishes it is the fact that they found 15 specimens.
Oh, yeah.
That is unparalleled.
Out of the gate. So there's no question of, is this an aberration?
That's right.
Is this a transitional fossil?
Is it a kid?
Are we misidentifying it as something else?
Sometimes we don't know, like if a species is male, female, dimorphic, is it one species or two species? Or is it just a male of one and a female of another? Or is that just the same species?
Right.
But when you find 15 individuals, you know what you have. You know, you have enough specimens to say this is a species, this is the range, everything.
Right.
And almost no bones are missing in that situation.
That's right.
So you really can construct a complete skeleton.
And the full hands like that, I think, are fairly rare as well.
Oh, it's amazing.
That's a lot of bones.
Plus, the guy that discovered this, I'm sorry I forget his name, Steve, you might know. The guy who discovered this has already made amazing discoveries, and this is just the icing on the cake. I'll use that twice in one show.
Tip of the eye.
But that, it's an amazing cap to his career. And that 15, that's is a career maker, just
in itself. Yeah, without a doubt.
But that was the interesting thing. It had these very hominid features that felt very upright and evolved, but then these very like Australopithecan features, or Australopithecine, I don't know the best way to put that.
Australopithecine,
You know, arboreal, like these grabby hands, these tree climbing, cool early hominins.
So, but that's often the case, you know, we find a new species. Mm-hmm. It's like it has a mix of primitive and advanced features. Yep. And that happens all the time because, you know, evolution is a branching bush, but we think of things in a linear way, knowing the end result is us. So we're advanced only because we're arbitrarily choosing ourselves as an end point.
That's right.
But evolution doesn't have an end point. It's just going every which way. It's just adaptive radiation.
And everything
so
is a missing link. Like
this
it's either nothing
right.
is
there
a missing
is no
link
missing
or
link.
Everything
is a missing
link.
So everything is a transitional species, right? It's transitional between something. And so this is when you think about it, this is what we expect to find. It's just telling us that we're just fleshing out this bush that's going in multiple different directions. It's not a linear progression. And so, it should be a mix of features.
We're so categorical in our thinking. I have Archaeopteryx lithographica on my forearm, and I love this fossil because, you know, a lot of people say, oh, it's a transitional fossil, it's a missing link style. Yeah. But you've got paleontologists who focus on dinosaurs saying, oh, it's a bird-like dinosaur. And then you have ornithologists saying, oh, that's a dinosaur-like bird. it's both.
It's in the middle.
I love that.
Yeah, I remember like Dwayne Gish trying to debunk Archaeopteryx. He's like, either it's a bird or it's a dinosaur. You know, it flew, it had feathers, therefore it's a bird. But it had teeth and a tail, therefore it's a dinosaur. Yeah, you're an idiot.
Birds are dinosaurs.
The whole point, first of all, birds are dinosaurs. But the whole point is, it's got a mixture. It's like one of the best transitions.
Oh, absolutely.
To deny that just shows how abjectly, blind he was. Absolutely was. He's dead. But, to me, that was the quintessential creationist transitional fossil denialism. Like, if you can't see the transitional status of Archaeopteryx. Then, of course, they say, well, it's not in line to modern birds. Of course it is. Nothing is. Everything is a branch.
Right.
You're never going to find that fossil that's exactly in the one tiny little subpopulation. You know, that chain is you know, just statistically, we're always going to be find things that are around the pathway that we're looking at, but never really on it.
Because Jesus didn't bury the fossils to you know, confuse us. Like, those fossils actually fossilized, and it's the teeniest fraction of life on Earth that actually was able to be preserved for us to find.
So, Bob or Jay, do you guys have any science news items of the year you'd like to add?
Yes, we do. Go now. Just follow me, everyone. Okay, please.
Gotcha.
Now, would you consider things like movie projectors and video recording equipment to be a science type item?
Technology,
right?
Science. Balls in the technology.
And would you consider the evolution of feet that human beings create? Like, we create movies. Mm-hmm. That's kind of has a science aspect to it, because we get better at it as time goes on, right?
Yes. Sure.
So Star Wars is my favorite science item of the year.
I didn't know that.
Right? Would you follow me on that?
No.
It's a movie. They use cameras and microphones. Yeah. That's all technology.
It's a particular work of art, though. The technology of movie making has added.
Well, that's it, then. It's the technology.
Tell me how it improved.
How what improved?
The technology of movie making.
Sure. Okay. Well, they have better cameras. They have better microphones.
All right. What do you got, Bob?
that was for both of us.
I've got CRISPR. I think we definitely got to mention CRISPR. It's definitely at the very least a top five.
CRISPR.
It's not necessarily my number one, but it's the one that needs to be mentioned tonight, I think. CRISPR is essentially it's gene editing technology. This was a very big year for CRISPR, I believe. They had a couple milestones. They did the first deliberate editing of a human embryo. They also did something called a gene drive, where they could accomplish things such as removing malaria, the potential for mosquitoes to spread malaria from their genome. Two big things. Not only that, it also has going for it that it's inexpensive and easy to do. Any bio lab can essentially use this technology. It's not something that needs a lot of money or a lot of ramp up time. So I think in the future we're going to see this is going to be a game changer, I think. This is going to be being able to edit genes on demand has so many ramifications.
Yeah.
Here's one thing that they've already done. Using animal organs to transplant into humans, right? Mm-hmm. You don't hear about that too much. That's because of the retroviruses that are in these animals, and people are afraid of what those retroviruses could have.
So these are old viruses, you're saying?
Right. How would you define retroviruses, Steve?
They're viruses that can insert their DNA into the host.
Well, they've been a big concern for using animal organs for transplanting. So one team using CRISPR technology took out all 62 retroviruses from a pig genome, wiped them all out.
So that would mean that the new host would accept it?
Well, not necessarily accept
it. These are viral inclusions, to be specific. So these are, over evolutionary history, occasionally a retrovirus will get its DNA into the genome, and will get passed on and become part of the DNA of the species, of the population. Mm-hmm. In fact, we can use that. We could see chimpanzees and humans have certain viral inclusions in common, and then we could see, like, when we split, because inclusions will occur later and later. Anyway, so one of the home run pieces of evidence for evolution, for common descent. You know, like, if we get a pig heart, pigs have a whole bunch of different retroviral inclusions in their genome. Now, sometimes they could be reactivated. And so we certainly wouldn't want to be introducing into a person 60 retroviral bits of DNA.
Right.
So I guess, you know, I'm not sure how likely that something bad would happen from that, but taking them out certainly nice.
My take was that was one of the reasons why that field has become, they described it as, it became moribund, because people were afraid of that. Now, using CRISPR technology, they took all of them, 62 of them, one fell swoop, completely gone. So now, it'll be much easier and much better for the people to receive, say, a pig heart or a pig whatever, because you know there's a lot of genetic compatibility between pig organs and human organs. That's why they're using them in lots of studies. So I just think we're going to be hearing more and more and more about CRISPR technology.
Cool.
Yeah, I mean, even though it's a couple years old, this is the year it really took off. And if you look at, like, the number of publications, scientific publications using CRISPR technology, it just exploded this year.
Yeah.
There's over 1,000 labs around the world who are actively using it.
Whoa.
So this is like one of these technologies that sort of comes out of the blue and is, you know, can really transform genetics. Not only just our ability to do research and to gain more knowledge, but I say that, you know, our ability to modify organisms.
But the more people that use it, the more modifications to the techniques and ideas.
And they're still refining it. It's getting getting the
and because it's so easy and cheap to implement, we will see an acceleration beyond what you would see with other technologies that are very difficult to play with.
The gene drive was new this year. Not that it wasn't theoretical prior to this year, but this was the first year that researchers actually made it work. Mm-hmm. And then they were like, holy crap, it works really well. It's like almost too well.
It was one of the holy grails of that field, and they did it with CRISPR this year.
Yeah.
Well, I want to add a couple.
Yes, our friend.
Brontosaurus. This is the year Brontosaurus came back.
I had that on my list. That was on my list. Why?
I don't know, because I feel like I was one of these like anti-Brontosaurus. Like,
how can you be against Brontosaurus?
Because she didn't grow up in the age of Fred Flintstone.
No. I grew up with Fred Flintstone, but I was one of those people who like was like that jerk kid who was like, Brontosaurus isn't a real thing. It's a Diplodocus with a Camarasaurus head. Like, I was always like really like...
You get teased on the playground all the time.
I was like, oh, this is not a real dinosaur. Like, I would correct people constantly, and now I'm like eating shit because I was that person.
Retro correct.
Exactly.
No, it was a good science story, and there are actually some details in there that it's a good teaching moment. Mm-hmm. And I learned something new about it because I didn't realize that Brontosaurus and Camarasaurus is at the genus level, not the species level. The specimen in question, it is its own species. The question was it in the genus Brontosaurus, mm-hmm. or is those two genera, Brontosaurus and Camarasaurus, are they the same? Mm-hmm. And the new bit was that they actually are different enough to be different genus. You know?
Oh, they made a final determination on this? Yes, it was suggested earlier this year that Brontosaurus have its own.
I think that's now the accepted conclusion. Okay. Final, I'll never say final.
Final, right. Moment.
This is very much a childhood dinosaur for me.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Right. Oh sure. You had a plastic toy that looked exactly like what we all did.
I always used like the Brontosaurus as a dividing line for the people who like really cared about dinosaurs. And if you were in the know, you knew Brontosaurus wasn't real. Like you knew that was a misnomer.
It was a Patasaurus actually.
You're right. It was a Patasaurus.
Yeah, Patasaurus.
I said Diplodocus. Yeah.
There's a Camarasaurus head on a Patasaurus.
Yes, it was.
But a Patasaurus.
But that was the New York specimen at the American Museum of Natural History.
Patasaurus had the precedence, right? So it's whatever the oldest. Mm-hmm. So if you have, you had a toe bone from 10 years previously, that name sticks.
Yep.
And sometimes that process falls down because
it captured the public consciousness
Of course, the worst representation of that was Eohippus being replaced with Hyracotherium, which is the wrong name. They actually changed a good name to an inaccurate name because the inaccurate name had precedence when they realized that they were to same specimen.
I'm impressed you remember that.
Steve, what about the
Steve? I'm impressed.
Steve, those two names, whenever I hear them, I think of one thing, one person.
Stephen Jay Gould.
I've heard those words over and over listening to his audiobooks, and those names are so linked to him.
We also have to mention that, the flowing water on Mars.
Definitely.
Yes.
Even though wasn't entirely new, that was more.
Don't you think it's interesting how Mars overall is becoming this more familiar world to us? And I think as we make these new discoveries, they seem only a little less like incredible to us because of the familiarity we are achieving with Mars.
Yeah, it's like the longer you've had, how many different rovers have we had on Mars? The longer that you are actively doing science in these places, every time NASA has a press conference now, like when Curiosity landed, people all over the world were like celebrating. It was huge. And now it's like, there's water. They're like, the old
water
hat.
On Mars?
Yeah.
What will it take to get us excited? I think
microfossils.
Well, we know there's no people, right?
That was 60 years ago. No, but we could put people on Mars.
Oh, landing people.
Landing people there or microfossils.
Or making movies.
That's huge. Oh, God.
Or living life
it would take a long time to actually figure out if that was Martian life or human life.
Yes. Do you ever think one day that people on Earth might be buying products that are made on Mars?
Sure.
No, seriously.
Made on Mars?
Yeah, like it could be like Mars.
Would it say made in Mars or made on Mars?
Made on Mars.
Made in China. Made on Mars.
Yeah, that's an import.
Unless they would name a Martian city.
Imagine what that
would cost. And would we call the first human that is born on Mars a Martian?
Sure.
Oh, gosh.
Like there's going to be the first real Martian one day.
Yes, there will be.
That whoever that person is.
And there'll be a sitcom called My Favorite Martian.
Yeah.
That's right. Right.
All right, let's move on to some other best and worst of 2015. Let's start by talking about our favorite SGU moments. I'm going to start by talking about a couple of things. We added two segments to the show this year.
Yep.
And mm-hmm. I'm really,
really
happy
good.
About both
yeah.
of them. I they're love both of them. The
very
first
good segments.
Was The Forgotten Superheroes of Science.
That's new this year?
Yeah, it just year. Started in January.
January. So you started the
yeah.
year with
yeah.
it. That's awesome.
Yeah, yeah. Because, you know, Rebecca left at the beginning mm-hmm. of the year, and she was doing
This Day in Skepticism.
This Day in Skepticism.
This Day in History, in Science
and,
History.
You know, it actually became a thing. It's like, how often does she cover like a female? Somebody said, why does Rebecca always cover females on This Day in Skepticism? And I actually counted, and it was like 15% of the time.
Yeah. Oh my God. I don't. Oh, so many
people
females.
Aren't paying attention. Attention.
Yeah, just, you know, it's nice when you have objective data to trump somebody's confirmation
perception.
Bias.
Yeah, yeah they're really going on.
So then, anyway, when she left and we were rejiggering, you know, who's doing what at the beginning of the year, I wanted to give Bob her segment, but I didn't want her, you know, I didn't want him to just, I thought that segment was played out.
Yeah.
It's like, we were like coming on, up on, like, we've done this day already, you know?
Like, this day.
I used all the good ones
year,
7 years
year
ago.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and so it was done, and I thought we needed something fresh, and, you know, Bob and I came up with the idea of the Forgotten Superheroes. It's like, it's sort of the same, but it's, and it's kind of an homage, I think, to Rebecca
right.
as well.
Sure,
yeah, but it all it gives us the freedom to do a lot in that segment. But it's really neat. There's lots of cool scientists out there that you know that nobody knows about.
Well, and it's such a part of the fabric of the show. I just assumed that it had been ongoing for years.
It's an evolution.
It feels like it's been ongoing.
It evolved
for years.
Into the Forgotten Superheroes of Science.
That's interesting.
Which is great.
It's a fun segment. The feedback has been great. I think. I've had almost no negative reviews.
Have you found yourself ever, when you're prepping for the segment, scrambling? Oh, what am I going to cover this week? I haven't been able to find anything. Or is it pretty common that you just have a laundry list of people you still haven't even gotten
to?
No,
I do a fresh search every week and go over. Sometimes it's very subjective though, because I've got to figure out, all right, what's, you know, what did they accomplish? Was it something that's really interesting? Mm-hmm. Sometimes it takes me a little time to find somebody that really was like, wow, how cool is that type of thing? Whereas this person was really cool and had some impact, but just like, you know, it's not quite over that line.
So you've come across a bunch of forgotten heroes, but the superheroes.
Yes, exactly.
I learned a lot from that segment, by the way.
I think it's a great segment.
Yeah, for sure.
Really worked out well.
Yeah.
Really worked out well.
It's really good.
And the other one, of course, was yours, Kara. What's the word? I love
the word.
What's the word is fun.
Word.
I love, when I first joined up, we were like, okay, we should have a segment. And we tried one segment that was not good.
Yeah.
Like, I remember trying, it's like growing pains.
Unscrewing the planet.
Yeah, it was something, unscrewing. So you sweetened it up a little. Uneffing the planet.
Unfornicating the planet.
Unfornicating the planet. Yeah. As opposed to formicating.
Yeah.
That's right. That was a word.
Yeah. But it was, first of all, like really hard to
it's
research.
Really hard. Some ideas look good on paper, but then when you try to execute it, like, wow, it's really hard to find something that fits these parameters.
Yeah, totally. But there will always be really interesting words with interesting backstories that confuse people or can enlighten people.
That's true.
So,
it's a bottomless pit. And they carry concepts with them. It's important.
They do.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I thought once we settled on that, I'm like, I love this.
Yeah,
this is
fun.
A fantastic
And now Bob and I are lucky because every week we get recommendations from listeners. They're like, oh, here's one
which
for you.
Which we love, by the way.
We get recommendations from just about all our segments.
Yeah, right.
I especially like the ones who send in the suggestions for science or fiction when the audience doesn't realize, well, everybody's reading those emails.
Like,
so can't really
well,
hear
there is a separate email for science or fiction, which only goes to me.
They occasionally read through on
it. Only goes to me?
Yes,
I dip into them every now and then.
Oh, nice.
But they got to be timely, so it's...
But it's definitely helpful. Like, I'll tell you what, especially during a busy week or a week when you're like, it's the day before the show and you're like, oh, I got to find a good word. Oh, I got three awesome recommendations this week.
It's great. And now we have interns helping us out.
That's right.
They're just getting started and we're really going to ramp them up at the beginning of the year, but they're sending us material as well, so that's very, very helpful.
So my favorite bit, selfishly, was my blaster bit.
Yeah, I know you love that.
I just loved it. I mean, what was fun was, you know, as I was researching, at first I realized there's not that many good blaster sounds. There really isn't.
Mm-hmm.
Second, of course, Star Wars sound effects blows away everything else. The quality of the, you know, just the inventiveness of his blaster sounds to me was much better than all the other stuff. A lot of stuff that I thought was good when I was a kid, it was just like embarrassing. Logan's Run, like the gun, that fire based gun. It was like, I was like, well, it wasn't even like exciting.
Yeah. I remember what it sounded like.
I remember even back then thinking, that's a janky sound.
Yep.
Janky could be a word.
Janky. Janky's perfectly fine.
Janky is exactly
janky's
the right
an
word.
Often used word.
I love the word janky. Yeah. We just got an email from somebody saying that the blaster, Who's That Noisy, was their favorite. Yeah. Yeah. For me, I was like, God, they all sound the exact same.
Not to me.
This was the year of an education into geekdom for me. Yeah. Like, this is heavy, intensive training.
Oh, yeah.
Look, I'm wearing a Star Wars shirt, you guys. Like, what happened?
I know, that's awesome. I'm so excited when you pulled that
May
out.
The dork like, be with you.
I watched all the, and it was so funny because I kept getting all of these, like, I kind of live tweeted watching all the Star Wars, and I would get tweets back from people like, have you literally never seen this before? And yes, I had watched the original three when I was, I don't know, a teenager. But the prequels, this is the first time I ever saw the prequels. Like, first time.
Well, in a way, you're very lucky.
I know.
Very
I know.
Lucky.
It was hard, you guys. Yeah. It was tough.
But you keep dragging
through. I did.
Screaming.
All right.
Moments. All right. Here was my moment for the year. It was an absolute thrill, pleasure, honor. I don't know what else you want to call it, to be in New York on stage performing with Bill Nye. Yeah. That was such
Without
a special,
a doubt,
special, yeah. special event. And that whole
episode was awesome. I remember when we were recording the episode live at Nexus, we had done the extravaganza the night before with Bill Nye, which was awesome.
That's right.
He just walked into our extravaganza. We knew he was going to do it, but I mean, we had like an hour prep with him, and he's such a professional. He was like, I got it.
He totally had it.
We ran the skit with him once.
He
totally had it.
He got it.
And then afterwards, like, so, you know, we're doing our show tomorrow night. If you're around, we'd love to have you on stage with us. And he's like, yeah, sure, I'll try to make it. And then he wasn't there when we started the show. Yeah. So like, yeah, it was a soft commitment. Didn't know if he was going to make it. So we start our show, and then about a third of the way through, we're talking about
the spider.
The spider thing where you can not see something that is there. And I see him out of the corner of my eye.
You just started riffing.
And I started riffing. It was just one of those things where I just was perfect. Like, I thought of what to do right in the moment. I'm like, it's like, you know, something could be happening right over there. And you wouldn't, and of course the audience totally got it. It was a perfect moment. That was a great moment.
It was great.
That was one of those. Like,
great entrance.
You think of the funny thing to do right in the real time.
Instead of five minutes later, when you're like, no!
Very hard to script
Bill
something
started
like that.
He
very
came
hard
on stage, like he was like,
oh, he was all gangly. Yeah,
that's an inspired emotion. Are among the most rewarding things in life, I think. You're just totally on for when you need
in
it.
The moment,
nanosecond
yeah.
you need it. It's like, yep.
I had. I think my best line of the year was during the extravaganza with Bill when George is asking a trivia question, and he said, Richard Dawkins had sex with a woman, and he paused, and I said, yes or no?
That was good.
That was by far my best.
I had another moment at Nexus that was funny. Evan, you were talking about your whole experience as a child. You basically have PTSD because your mother and your sisters would take you clothes shopping.
Yeah.
That was Tam. No, that,
no,
that was Tam.
No,
it was Tam.
Tam.
That was a Tam.
Yes.
Somebody said,
oh, and they would like feel the fabric and they would do it. They would spend all this time examining the clothes. And then someone said to you, why don't you just shop online? Like you said, no, you said you can't go clothes shopping. You want to go in there and get it and get out. And Jay said, buy your clothes online. You're like, yeah, but you know, I have to go and see it. It's like, yeah, you gotta feel the fabric and look at the buttons. And I killed myself. But I started laughing when I was delivering the line. It was so perfect.
You see, that's the problem with this sort of deep programming is no matter, you try to escape, but you always fall back into the web.
But tell me, how great was George when we did that? I had just joined you guys.
Yeah.
Like, we had done our first episode live there. You had only asked me like weeks before. Mm-hmm. And we decided to do this special kind of for members only.
I called it, yes.
No, it was a private recording.
Private recording.
Most live event.
And George just put on his shrink hat.
He did. I called that show George's Couch.
George's Couch.
We all lied down on the couch.
Yeah.
He got us to say some things we never said before.
Yeah.
It was very cool.
It was weird too because I learned things about you guys I didn't know. You know, just started talking. How often do we like delve into like aspects of our past with each other? We just assume we know each other so well. I had no idea about that. You know, I heard everybody say, so. Of course, with you, Kara, like everything was new.
It was new.
Yeah. But it was nice. It was like an introduction to you in a sense as well.
I remember Steve said that his biggest flaw was that he's lazy.
Yes. Your perception that you are lazy.
But yes, it's your perception that you're lazy. But
it wasn't my biggest flaw.
We were all like,
it was
what?
The biggest.
No, you're right.
Overrated. What do you overrated?
Oh, overrated.
And my point was
people
that
people think that you're not.
People, it's so mythic how hard I work. Nobody could ever live up to that.
Yeah.
So by comparison, I think I'm lazy.
Yeah.
But anyway.
All right, to the demigod that people have. Yeah, I hear you.
It's a running gag. You know.
It is a gag.
Whatever.
But
the
true.
Fact is, though.
Well, it is.
The fact is, I work all the time. I am never not moving.
Yeah.
And I'm like, and when I'm finally resting and I lie down, I'm smug about it. Like, yes, this is it. No, but nothing is going to interfere with this moment.
I gave myself a spa day the other day, and I like tweeted about it. I was all like, I'm unplugging. Yeah. I'm at the spa. I earned this, bitches. Like, I was so proud of myself for going to the spa.
I'll do that. We'll spa. I'll spa with you.
Nice. Korean spa.
All right. Whatever.
It's the best. I'm in. I don't know if you have that in here.
Yes, we do. I'll do it with you.
New York. I'm going to the city.
Let's talk a little bit about Skeptic of the Year. And then we'll talk about Skeptical Jackass of the Year.
Okay.
Can we go Skeptical Jackass first?
Sure. What do you got?
The Food Babe.
Food Babe.
Funny you mentioned that. Yeah.
I think
was this her breakout year? I mean, she...
14. She came to our attention in 14.
But
she upped her game.
She's got can't pronounce it.
She's got the hat on.
That is so funny.
she represents to me everything I hate and despise about the whole industry of fear-mongering food toxins and natural and
chemicals.
I look at her as someone that is completely riding her ignorance.
Yeah.
Like, doesn't even pretend to not be ignorant. Like, how about the thing that I don't remember when this came up, but the whole, like, ridiculous statements about airplane, like, traveling on an airplane. She was factually wrong about almost every single thing that she
said. What did she say is bad about being on an airplane?
She's like, are you aware of the fact that the airline pumps, they mix, like, 70% nitrogen in with your oxygen? When you're on a plane, they're not
don't
giving
laugh.
You pure
don't
oxygen.
Don't laugh. She's serious.
She was serious.
Don't laugh.
Why are you
they
seriously?
Adulterate it with nitrogen.
You take her seriously.
Pure nitrogen.
She was also like talking about like the air exchange.
Yeah, they bring in air from the outside, or the pilots keep all the good air for themselves.
Oh, that's hilarious.
And then the other thing was the pressure. She got the pressure reversed.
Right.
Yes, it's actually, it's not higher when you're on a plane.
Yeah.
It's actually lower. It's,
between 8 and 10, I think.
Yeah, 7,000 feet is what they pressurize
the cabins to. They're getting better. They're starting to get better. Even with airplane pressure, they're starting to get better. They have new airlines. Now, I think there's like one plane that came out recently that has like
it's 5,000
like humidified, it's like the air is humidified more and the pressure's a little different.
But the fact is,
better to approximate.
The air on the plane is not bad.
It's not bad.
It's
dry. Dry is the one thing.
It's dry. It's the only time I ever use nasal spray is on a plane.
You got to use the chapstick.
Yeah, chapstick, nasal spray,
drink a lot of water.
But people are gross on planes.
Do you ever look at that little hole in the windows on the airplane?
Oh yeah, with the ice crystals next to it.
Yeah, but you know what you know why that hole's there?
For pressure fluctuation.
Right. Yeah. Just lets it. Yeah. It's the outside most panel is the one that you don't want broken.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? The inside
there
one
is a
like,
little breach on the inside one just to help with. And it always has ice.
I noticed that.
Yeah. It's cold up there.
Vanna has no interest in being educated. This is it. I mean, she is stuck in her ways and she doesn't want to hear it from anybody.
She's an industry of fear and ignorance.
She found her sweet spot. She when she does this, she gets a heavy response. She's making a lot of
money. Reminds me of Ann Coulter, where it makes you wonder, like, do they actually believe the things they say? Or do they just know that they've got this niche and they're making money off of it?
I think it's bullshit.
Yeah.
Meaning they don't care if it's true.
They don't care. Exactly.
Not that they know that it's wrong. It doesn't matter. It's the truthiness thing.
Because they have to know that people who are smart know that they talk about how wrong they are all the time.
Especially in this day and age.
Yeah, and at a certain point, when your response to that is not to say, maybe I should think, it's just to dig your heels in deeper.
They're a shill.
Yeah, then that's a position.
Mm-hmm. That's why I hate her.
She's hateable.
The definitely she's one of the most anti-skeptical people.
Oh. Anti-science.
Oh, gosh.
Anti-science.
Yeah, but I mean, everything that we stand for, you know, transparency, honesty, truth, mm-hmm. rational, you know, logic,
being able
evidence.
To change your mind, yeah.
Being open-minded. She's the opposite. She is the opposite of skepticism.
It's
you
just,
know?
It's hard for
ignorant,
me to
gullible,
take...
gullible, fear-mongering.
Yeah. It's hard for me to take people like that seriously. Like, you'll see me laugh a lot when we talk about these skeptical... What do we call them? Skeptical jackasses?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You'll see me laugh a lot when I hear the crazy things that they're saying. And I think that that's my way of coping with the fact that they exist in the world. Yeah. And they actually, yeah. there are people that,
they
do,
people.
Of course they hurt
oh,
people.
They do hurt.
But I think Ooh. The, what I don't want to do is I don't want to make them relevant.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I want to maintain an idea, at least in my own head and in the heads of the people that I am close to and that I share my thoughts with, that they are irrelevant.
Mm-hmm.
That they are,
deserve to
that
be
this
marginalized.
Is comical to me.
Yeah.
It's only comical and it's not anything more than that. And, you know, hopefully if you just continue to have that mindset. The problem is the minute that I start to really take them very seriously, I'm afraid that then I am giving them cred.
Yeah, I know, but we and
it's a classic problem.
Yeah, it's hard. Yeah, you struggle with
it. We try not
it.
To give attention to people who don't deserve it,
mm-hmm.
and also like just the innocent rank and file people. They're the people we're trying to educate.
Yeah, the people
trying,
who are yeah. following.
We don't
who are
make
reading
fun of them.
Yeah, of course.
But if you are like, yeah, if you are gathering an army of followers and you're leading people in the wrong direction, and you're doing it mainly to make money or just because
sure.
you don't care about the truth. You deserve to be criticized.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. So, we try not to give more attention to people than they deserve.
I just try not to let her get, I try not to let myself get angry because of her.
Yeah.
Instead, I just laugh.
Yeah.
Because That's it is true. Really funny
okay.
to me.
It, yeah, from a perspective, if you rule out, if you ignore the harm, the real harm.
Exactly.
That she does,
if I'm just looking at it from my own, because
it
I don't
comical.
Believe any of it, obviously, so
yeah.
like it's funny to me.
She's a parody of herself. This is like, you know, this, the meme, if I can't pronounce it, it causes cancer. That's not too far off the mark.
Yeah.
It's funny. It's funny because you could imagine her saying something like that.
Yeah.
You know, that's actually pretty much what she does say.
Yeah.
You know?
She doesn't wear that hat, though.
That's a very
She also said this year, there's no acceptable amount of any chemical ever anywhere. You know, like, yeah, really? So you don't drink water? You know?
Nothing. Yeah, yeah. So you live in a vacuum?
Yeah. Yeah.
That nitrogen that you're yeah. in the air?
Yeah, you know how, like, when yes. they'll use the chemical name of water and they get people on it?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Dihydrogen.
Dihydrogen.
Monoxide.
Yeah. yeah.
anybody else, guys?
Martin. Martin Shkreli. Shkreli.
Yeah.
Is that how you say
Shkreli.
His name? Shkreli.
Shkreli.
Yeah,
he took the perp walk the other day.
He took the perp walk.
Yeah.
This is what I love about his story. Because not only did he price gouge with this drug that like cancer and HIV patients were taking for years at $13.50 a pill and make it, what,
$750? $13.50 up
it's
to
like, that's a reasonable profit. I'm not gouging.
I'm not gouging.
It's for R&D, right?
Yeah, on a drug that's been out for ages. Not only that, he just, like you said, he perp walked this week. He got arrested, what was it for?
The FBI.
Securities fraud.
For securities fraud. Unrelated, completely unrelated to the pharmaceutical stuff.
But is it really, when you start thinking about it, how in deep he was with the mutual fund that he started that folded?
Mm-hmm.
Why do you think he price gouging now?
No, I agree. But he wasn't charged with the price gouging is what I'm saying.
Yeah,
because
that
right.
technically wasn't illegal, which is a huge bummer.
This is all alleged, just accusations, and he did get arrested by the FBI, but the story that's emerging is that he's alleged to basically have been engaging in a smaller version of the Madoff Ponzi scheme, where you take money from one set of investors to pay off the previous investors. You're always going from one scam to the next. And you're right, the price gouging might have been just the next stone that he was hopping to.
He's
in order
like,
to pay back.
He's exhausted
the
everything on Wall Street
yeah.
that he had to then go into pharmaceuticals because everybody on Wall Street was like, I'm not going to invest with Shkreli. Yeah.
Yes. This guy's just a criminal.
Well, this guy's such a.
This is not Big Pharma.
People are already distrustful of Big Pharma. We know that.
Yeah.
We see that all the time. So the fact that this was national news because it was that much worse than anything that people think Big Pharma's doing. I mean, this guy, this is one of those few times in my life where like I was joining in on the schadenfreude. Like I was like excited. Like I actually tweeted like, karma's a bitch.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
He got his.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
Sure
what
did.
A dick.
And they set his bail at $5 million, which he just paid.
With somebody else's money.
Of course.
What? He just paid. He had $5
million. He had it,
I'm sure
yeah.
he had it liquid, but he probably owes $50 million.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Mm.
Ugh.
Yeah, right.
Really.
All right, my vote, Jackass of the Year, the anti-GMO movement.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone
anti-GMO.
Movement.
Are we going to pick the movement?
Okay. Well,
all right, no problem.
But are they putting blood in that tomato?
So, the
it's a blood.
injecting fruit or vegetables with a syringe is like the visual means.
I wish it was that easy. Wouldn't it be easy if you could inject fruit with a syringe and then you had a GMO?
It's crazy. And then the Frankenfood is the other one. You like the apple pear over here. But, you know,
Frankenfood.
The entire movement.
That is a great
And I'm not, again, we're not talking about like the rank and file person who is just has concerns about GMO because they hear concerning things and they're misinformed. We're not talking about that.
We're talking about activists.
We're talking about the activists. Yeah. We're talking about Greenpeace. Oh, you know, I'm talking about Greenpeace. The people who are generating misinformation. I'm talking about Vandana Shiva. She's probably my, if I had to name one person, she is it.
She sticks out more than anybody else.
She charges $40,000 to lie about, and to make up crap about GMO. She invented the whole notion that Monsanto was causing Indian suicides. Mm-hmm. Which is not true. It's not true. And so when I talk about GMOs and people raise concerns to me, every one of the concerns that they raise are either missing the point or they're just flat out factually wrong. People, I think, are more filled with misinformation on the GMO issue than anything else that we talk about.
Yeah.
We talk about a lot of crazy shit.
Oh, yeah.
But this is it. This year, it really came home to me how thorough, that's the disconnect. And this is actually literally true because, you know, there's this survey that looked at what scientists believe, what the public believes, and the biggest disconnect was on GMOs.
Interesting.
Because that's where the public is the most misinformed.
And there's so much misinformation that the GMO, anti-GMO nuts give you the classic moving the goalpost response. They, more than anybody, you answer one of their questions, but what about this?
But what about
this? Yeah, but it's not really that because it's
really about this. It's
like,
really, I don't think you should patent seeds.
Exhausted. Yeah, they take it to a place that's like, wait, now we're having a conversation about like capitalism?
Yeah.
Like, what does that have to do with anything?
Exactly.
What's the motivation behind it?
It's the organic food industry. Mm-hmm. It's the organic food industry trying to take out their competition.
Yep.
Because the only way to guarantee right now that you're not getting GMO food is to buy organic.
Yep.
It's the anti-GMO movement and propaganda machine is basically the organic food industry.
And it's just an easy one because you can leverage people's currently existing fear.
Yes. No, a lack of knowledge as well.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's easy to scare people with this is, it ain't natural. There's something disgusting, vaguely disgusting about
it. When it goes in their body, it's
there's
one of the
fish genes in tomatoes. Yeah. You know what? 60% of you are fish genes.
And even with medicine, right? Like, you see it with like the anti-vax stuff, but there's only like certain experiences in your life when you need to get vaccinated. You eat food every day.
Yep. Yeah.
So this is something that's very close to people's emotional center.
For sure.
And it's part of a much bigger movement, which I do, the term was coined recently, I'm not sure if it was this year, of orthorexia, which is an obsession with clean eating.
Clean
and
eating.
There's actually an industry of clean eating that is giving people a mental illness of orthorexia by making them obsessed with this whole clean eating.
It's like that woman who's an airrexic. You remember the woman who only eats air? Do you guys remember her?
I've heard stories like that.
I guess that's an extreme example of that.
That's an extreme
example.
Can't
get cleaner than that.
But yeah, I mean, you know, I have patients all the time. It's like they're obsessed with things that are just not the problem. No, it's not gluten. You're not allergic to gluten. It's not. I checked.
Yellow number 9 or whatever. It's like maybe you're just eating way too much saturated fat.
But that's the organic food industry is based upon that as well.
It's funny. It's not based on any of the core things that science tells us are not good for you. You know, like eating way too much sugar and way too much saturated fat. Things that like we know that if you balance certain parts of your diet, you will lose weight and you will be healthier. It's like, no, it must be the dye in the foods that's making me sick.
It's
that you're eating 4,000 calories a day. Yeah.
And the words genetic modification put together really scares people.
Oh, yeah.
They have no idea
and
what that really means.
And transgenic is not any better. Even though that's more correct, transgene.
I found out that lot of people don't even understand that every single thing that we eat has been selectively bred.
Right.
For what?
That's right.
A thousand years,
artificially.
Couple thousand.
Yeah, it's not just that. It's that mutagenesis, like mutation farming. Remember that Simpsons episode where they cover the field with radiation? That's real!
Yeah.
They really do that. They use chemicals and radiation to accelerate the mutation in crops in order to have more mutations to choose from to try to get those favorable mutations that they're going for. And that's okay. That's organic.
And also,
but tweaking one gene that you know exactly what you're doing, that's horrible. That's
copper. You can dump copper all over all your plants, and that's organic.
Yeah.
Copper pesticides. It's fine.
It's because it's natural.
So dangerous to eat heavy metals.
All extensions of the natural.
It's all natural. But if you use glyphosate, which we all know. Like, mm-hmm. I remember interviewing farmers for a piece on Al Jazeera about genetic modification. And I was talking to a farmer who grew up in a farm, you know, multi-generational farmer. And it's like, you know, when we think about heirloom tomatoes and we think you're just being forced to use Roundup ready crops or whatever. And they're like, are you kidding me? Like, why do you think farmers use Roundup?
Because
it like
works.
Life-saving. Yeah. It's like, nobody's being forced to buy this stuff. Yeah. It's like the most amazing thing that ever happened to modern farming. Of course, we all choose Roundup because that means our plants will live.
Yeah.
They won't die.
And the weeds will die.
It was like just a marvel of modern science. And people think, oh no. It's like, because they don't want to lose the image in their head of a farmer being this pure person who tills the, yeah. And it's like, it's all commercialized.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Even organic farming.
Even organic farming is commercialized.
Any other jackasses? Are we going
I see one.
Got
I one. See you have one.
I've got one.
Who do you got?
One.
It's just such a good picture.
I've talked about her in the past, and I think she outdid herself this year. Yeah, there she is. Hi, Gwyneth. How are you? How's everything going over there at Goop, at your nice little
Goop,
your nice little website, your nice little company that gives you all sorts of good information. Oh, for example, one of these doctors that she has, he's a Dr. Alejandro Junger, medical medium. Yes, a man of science.
Medical medium.
He says,
I've been taught to the point of indoctrination that I must only trust what I can observe, measure, test, and reproduce.
Well, that sounds good.
That does sound good, right?
Oh, wait, he was indoctrinated with
That's right, entirely indoctrinated. Mm. But he needs to be able to go beyond that. There's a mysticism to life. So he's incorporating both his technical training as a doctor with things that we cannot
that you
test
can make
with
up.
Science.
Yeah.
Yeah, things you can make up.
This is what...
I realized it was much easier to just make shit up. Just sort of wing it as I go along.
I've written so many books before.
It's hard to keep up with all that scientific evidence.
I know.
Just make shit up.
Yeah. So this is what she's promoting. This is one of her doctors. She also came under fire this year for promoting the fact that brassieres can cause breast cancer.
Yeah. Brassieres.
So we should women
Who calls
everywhere.
It a brassiere, Evan? It's a bra.
Yeah.
Bra.
Yeah, bro. It's a bra.
Bustiers.
That's different. That's under here.
I was just sitting there going,
cup razors.
I always like to kind of put myself in the room. Like, what was the thought process? Like, when did the bra come under fire? Why the bra?
Because she's trying to think of like the one thing that is in common with all the people who have breast
cancer.
Like,
that's like,
it makes no sense.
She loves cupping. She loves vaginal steaming. Is very
vaginal steaming.
You ever tried that, Karen?
I have not. Well. It sounds refreshing.
How can maybe on the
vaginal steaming.
They say it's
what
very
it?
Bad.
What do you vaginal?
Well, you know, there's a device and a woman kind of squats over it and it lets the steam do its business.
Yeah.
And that's supposed to somehow be good for you.
What
yes.
does that even mean?
Yeah, it's just something.
What also I love about Gwyneth, love hate about Gwyneth Paltrow is like beyond the skeptical angle of all the crazy pseudoscience that she promotes. She's like this out-of-touch rich bitch. Mm-hmm. Like, she has this website that's supposed to be all about, like, self-help and, like, helping women, you know, find themselves and feel good about themselves.
But
all she does is denigrate poor people.
Yeah.
And talk about all the awesome things that you can do when you have shitloads of money. And you're like, that doesn't make anybody feel good about themselves.
Yeah.
It's
so
terrible.
Much crap she purveys. A book came out earlier this year. Titled, Is Gwyneth Paltrow Wrong About Everything? Yeah. Title of the book, Timothy
it's a
Caulfield.
Serious question, yeah.
And we interviewed him.
We did
so
interview him.
When you have a book that comes out about you being wrong about everything, I think that earns you a position as one of the jackasses.
Sure. So let's talk for a minute about skeptics of the year.
Yes, let's do that.
So let me start off. Okay. Since this in keeping with my GMO theme, I'm going to say Kevin Folta. For Skeptic of the Year.
Nice.
So Kevin is a great science communicator, really has given himself to spending a lot of his time, a lot of his energy communicating his science to the public, including countering the misinformation about GMOs. And he's really put himself in the crosshairs, and he paid for that this year because of the U.S. Right to Know group, which put out a Freedom of Information Act request against him and other scientists looking for their emails so they can go trolling through their emails looking for things that seem nefarious. Mm-hmm. And of course they found stuff. Now, I have to say that I do think Kevin made a tactical error.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, everything he did was perfectly legal and ethical and disclosed and everything. But, you know, he underestimated that, the notion that the reality is not enough. You have to make an ironclad perception of no intermingling. So his university accepted $20,000 from Monsanto to pay for, like, you know, gas and whatever travel money to give lectures. He wasn't personally given the money. You know, nothing, nothing ended up in his pocket.
And none of it was for research.
None of it was for research. It was just literally for, like, gas and sandwiches.
But it doesn't look good.
But it doesn't look good.
No.
Right.
It's one of those things where, like, like, I do, I've talked to you guys about this. I do branded entertainment sometimes as a journalist, it's tough. You want to find the balance. So I'll get an offer from maybe a computer company that says we want to shoot. So, okay, like, do I feel like you're in my wheelhouse? Whatever. Yeah. Monsanto did offer me money once. They said, we want to do a branded campaign. We know that you are like a big pro GM activist, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, I cannot take money from you.
Yeah.
The minute I take money from Monsanto, are you kidding me?
Right.
They approached me with an email.
Yeah.
And my response was, don't ever contact me again.
Exactly. Like, I don't want
records
of this.
If you like what I'm doing, don't ever contact me again.
Luckily, they only approached my agent. I never had any direct communication.
Now, why is it don't contact me? Because I'll take the money.
Because I've been writing about it. You know, they found, they say, oh, we like what you're doing. Good, then shut up.
Right, why don't they realize that that prophylactic is very important?
Well, also, the funny thing is, they don't realize that, like, they don't have to pay us.
Yeah.
Because we actually think
this is why I'm kind of confused as to why they would even reach out. Don't they realize?
Well, companies do this. Companies reach out to scientists who have opinions that they agree with, and they want to facilitate their communication of those opinions to the public. And yes, there's actually, it's all perfectly reasonable, but when you think about it, it does give companies, because they have the money, gives them the ability to give, you know, greater exposure to scientific ideas that are to their advantage.
Yeah. Totally.
Even though they might not be objectively, you know, representing the correct answer or the majority of scientists out there. They could find the minority and amplify their voice. So yes, that's why you absolutely need to disclose all of your funding sources.
Yeah, it's like, you know, physicians who are paid speaking fees to speak at a pharmaceutical
to say that they love that drug.
Exactly.
They're not being told what to say. No. They're being chosen because what they're saying is already in line with the company.
And
so
that's
a
personal decision, but you have to disclose it. And Kevin, not only did he, and granted, ethically, he didn't really do anything wrong.
No,
not only did he not disclose it, like, once it was out, it became out. The problem is that I think he dug his heels in a little bit too much. Instead of being like, you're right,
he said, this shouldn't be a problem. Like, yeah, you're right, it shouldn't be
a
problem.
But it is. Yeah.
But he paid a heavy price for it because he actually had, you know, about 6 weeks or so ago, had to, like, leave the internet because he was getting harassed and his family was getting harassed and his bosses were getting harassed. They've really, the food babe went after him. I mean, but it just got to the point where he's coming back. He's coming back, but he had to take a break because the harassment just got too extreme.
And this is a guy who has a history, like, this is before the FOIA request. He would get emails that said, drink a glass of Roundup. I hope you and your family get brain cancer and die. Like, he's read
Vicious.
These emails and they're horrific.
Vicious.
So I can't imagine the change after the FOIA request. Like, and he was just so in the press. So many people
and
started writing
about it. He's a super nice
it.
Guy. He's totally honest. Yeah. Again, this is just, he was demonized because he's, you know, communicating the correct science out there.
The burden.
Yeah. And he learned a harsh lesson, but he's taking his lumps. He's going to be back. And, you know, he took one for the team, in my opinion, this year. Mm-hmm.
And the sad thing is there aren't enough people like Fulton.
Yeah,
if
that's
it were
right.
spread out more, he wouldn't be bearing the brunt of this.
That's right.
Right.
And he's a big target.
He has lots of communications with his colleagues who are like, I'm not doing it. I'm not getting into public communication because why am I going to get all those headaches?
You see it with animal. I see this all the time when I'm interviewing people who run animal labs. And they'll talk about the things outside, but you can't show the animals on TV. You can't even have a comment because they're like, I don't want to get bombed.
Right.
I don't want to get broken into in my animal. Released. It's just not worth the hassle.
Yeah. It's anti-science terrorism. Mm-hmm.
That's right.
What it is.
Yes.
And it works, unfortunately.
Wow.
So yeah, that was
I never heard those three words together.
That's what it is. That's what it is.
So I don't want to put Steve on a pedestal, but this was a hard year for you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I was in about 25% of your pain, even though you and I talked about it almost every day. I took a little bit of personal heat, but I started to snap. And Steve was on the front line for the entire year and a half.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we won our court case. Right now, it's being...
It's not over yet, so he's appealing.
Yeah, he's appealing the court case, which means...
Of course he is.
And the real battle is over how much of my fees are we going to get him to pay.
Right.
I already know it's going to be somewhat.
It's how much money are you going to actually get
back
that you already put out.
How
will
we be made whole.
Yeah. So the thing that I witnessed, though, and it was very similar to what Kevin was doing, it got to a point... It was really difficult. Like, Steve and I would talk about it, and it was just unrelenting. It was just like, the tide coming in. It was just wave after wave after wave of drama and money And, you know, why would that happen? Why is this happening? You know, we learned a lot about getting sued and, yeah, and lawyering up. You know, I kept like posing this question to Steve. If we can go back right now and you could just remove that guy's name from the blog post, would you do it and undo this whole thing? And Steve, like without missing a heartbeat every time. And I was saying yes at this point. Mm. It's not worth it. It's too much emotional toll. Steve said, absolutely not. That's why we're here.
Yeah.
It's what we do.
Yep. And, you know, I respect the hell out of you for you know, maintaining your ground, Steve. You saw this all the way to the end. You never lost your cool. You know, when I went in for deposition, mm-hmm, I was like, it was like I was walking into a fist fight. That's how I took it.
Yeah.
And Steve was coaching me, just saying, look,
Thank God Steve was coaching you.
Yeah. Steve was just saying, stay in the front of your mind.
Yeah.
Don't slip into your emotions. Stay there. You know what they're trying to do. You have to, you know, maintain your cool. He totally coached me on just where my head needed to be. And it worked. You know, most importantly, though, I learned how important all this is to Steve.
Well, this is the definition of, you hear that phrase, pick your battles, right? You're in a relationship. You want to fight about everything. Pick your battles. You know, obviously let some things go. But on the flip side of that, there are certain battles that you have to fight because they set precedence, mm-hmm, for so many other people.
Yeah, right.
And if you don't fight that battle, that is really a battle for respect of the Constitution.
It's existential for us. Yeah. I mean, this is for science-based medicine, for skepticism. You know, we have to fight these fights every now and then.
Because this is the purpose that, like, we exist.
Yes.
This is what it means to be a skeptic.
You cave now, then we have nothing. Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
But so we're hoping about a year from now, you know, maybe this time next year, the appeal will come and go. Mm-hmm. And then the judge is going to have to decide, you know, how much money the SGU will get back and what we put out. And I mean, I'm saying there's no way we're going to have paid off the lawyer a year from now anyway. So, you know, it'll be good. If we can at least pay the lawyer back and get to some type of ground zero after this, it'll be.
But, you know, a lot of generous listeners did support our legal defense fund, and that definitely helped us get this far.
But what you're saying, Jay, is that Steve
skeptic
is
of the year?
Skeptic of the year.
I mean,
skeptical hero.
I hate to pat any of us on our own backs. You know what I mean? But I was on first base with Steve the whole way. Mm-hmm. I saw every play. I saw everything. I heard everything. I read every email. I was in the deposition. You know, I saw Steve in action, and I'm utterly impressed with how Steve handled this whole thing and, you know, how much he was giving me moral support, and he was the one that was actually, you know, really in trouble. I was taking emotional abuse hearing Steve go through this, and he was telling me,
"You'll be okay."
Vigilant.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
like,
stay
it's
vigilant.
Cool.
You'll be fine. We will get through, you know, like,
calm down, Jay.
Just played masterfully, and I love and respect this man, but I saw him with his feet in the fire, and he didn't cry.
And when Simon Singh went through what he went through in England with his lawsuit and very similar sort of circumstances, he was absolutely correctly lauded and viewed as one of the best skeptics for that year.
Without
for
a doubt.
Years for having to go through that fight. And basically when you go through these fights, you're going through it not just for yourself, but a lot of other people that you're kind of taking the bullet for.
See, Jay's being objective. Mm-hmm. In nominating you, right?
Yeah.
It's being objective.
And on top of that, because of this, Steve took it upon himself to try to get every state in the United States to pass an anti-SLAPP law, which we're in process of doing right now.
Which is huge.
All right, so let's move on to In Memoriam. Every year we remember those who we lost over the course of the year. I know Kara, Oliver Sacks was a huge person to you, and he passed away this year, so he died. Tell us again about what your experience with him.
I think that everybody can probably list, or hopefully if you were lucky, can probably list one person in your life that really influenced you that you knew personally as you were growing up, and one person that influenced you who you never actually had a chance to meet, but really meant a lot. And I never actually met Oliver Sacks. When I got involved in science, he was the person who made me fall in love with neuroscience. The first book that I read that was really meaningful was The Man Who Mistook His Wife for a Hat. And I immediately bought all of his other books, and I even read the hard ones like Migraine. It's a very hard book to read.
Was he a bigger influence on you than Carl Sagan?
For me, yes, personally, because he was more contemporary. Mm-hmm. Carl Sagan was dead before I ever really knew who he was. My interest in Carl Sagan came a little bit later, but also Carl Sagan is a physicist. Mm-hmm. And he really inspired a love of science in me, and he inspired a love of critical thinking in me. But my science love was in the neurosciences. Mm-hmm. And Oliver Sacks was the one who helped me fall in love with the brain-behavior relationship and how really it is true that with a bump on the head, you can actually lose core parts of the self, and really how this organic brain matter makes up who we are.
Right. Yeah, that's interesting. Mm-hmm. I mean, definitely, because Sagan hit us in our sweet spot, mm-hmm. you know, like yeah. the timing was such that...
Sure did.
Yeah, in terms of reinforcing our love of science, you know, appreciation for epic, iconic science communication. He died right when we were at the beginning of our skeptical activism. You know, mm-hmm. yeah. unfortunately, it was. You know, we often talk about what it would have been like if he was around for another 5 or 10 years.
Yeah, we would have met
what
him,
an influence.
Which would have really been amazing.
Gosh,
for
yeah.
us.
Yeah.
Right.
I think for a lot of people my age, Neil deGrasse Tyson, really. Maybe. You know, a lot of people think of him as the new Sagan. I know Neil very well, like personally. He's been a personal mentor of mine. There's something about Oliver Sacks that was still kind of intangible and magical mm-hmm. to me right. because yeah. I never yeah. had the chance to meet him.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And so there's an untouchable quality. Yeah.
I think Neil is serving that role for a lot of people.
Oh, most
sure
definitely.
Is.
And I think
yeah.
he's amazing as a communicator.
Very much so.
We also talked earlier in the year when Wallace Sampson died.
Yeah.
So
gosh.
Not obviously a famous person, but Wally Sampson was one of the founders of science-based medicine. Mm-hmm. So before we get to science or fiction, Kara, every year when we do this review, a fan sends us a mashup of one of the rogues of like the funniest things that they said throughout the year. And this year it was your turn.
You've been mashed.
Because everyone else has been done before, so and you're the new rogue. So let's take a listen to what they got.
Back at my house, we would call that a dad joke, which is complete and total horseshit.
Penis.
I could probably handle John Hamm. It's bullshit. But a lot of people just think she's a bitch. Penis. Oliver Sacks said shit. No more crazy than a jackal. Am I right? Let's not forget entertainers with vaginas. God darn it. He would have contaminated the shit out of the red planet. Oh. Duct tape is magic and should be worshipped. All I gotta say to that is like climate change, yo. It's good that they didn't call them the Mad Haberdashers. Yep. Another week, another poop story. I get non-fat milk so I can add whip. They call them crypts. I might be Googling him right now. A good argument should be like sex. It shouldn't be just like masturbating. I wonder how male my brain is. Your DVR must be so boring.
You have been mashed. That was awesome.
I'm so mature.
I don't know how he pulls that off. How does he pull that off? Think about the work that would be involved. Unless he does it... Every episode he listens to, he saves little snippets.
Well, that's the way to do it, of course.
Yeah,
absolutely.
That's the only way.
I don't know. I loved them, too, because they were all really random. Apparently, I just say a lot of really random
I love
shit.
These. These mashups are like a rite of passage. It's very, very cool, I think.
Yeah, so that was from Jason Ferber. Jason's been making those for us every year, so thanks, Jason. We really appreciate that.
Yeah, thanks, Jason.
Thanks, Jason.
Guys.
Yeah.
Let's go on to science or fiction.
It's time for science or fiction.
Before we get to the actual science or fiction, the last one of 2015, we have stats, as we do every year. A couple of listeners have sent us statistics. They listened to every episode and mark who got... Who was correct, who was wrong, sweeps, everything. It's pretty amazing. So
yeah, it's like the sabermetrics of science or fiction.
Taylor Harris did some pretty thorough statistics. So we'll start with just the raw numbers. The percentage of this percentage correct. So who do you think, we'll start with the bottom. Who was at the bottom this year?
I could either be inflated or really bad. I don't know. I think I'm somewhere in the middle.
I'm low.
Evan was at 43.1%, which is about where you run, Evan.
That's typically. Yeah, I'm in the mid-40s. Yeah, that's why I wanted to get to 50. I couldn't quite make it.
Didn't break 50.
No. Nope.
Bob, 44.2%.
You, whoa, what the?
Oh, no, how are you usually?
What?
Bob's usually in the 60s.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
What happened, Bob?
I had a horrible year.
A horrible year. You crashed and burned this year.
What the hell? Oh, wait. Actually, that's so low, and I'm so close to Evan, it's got to be an error.
I don't think so.
I'm just saying, Bob, it's got to be.
Bob, embrace your mediocrity. Come on.
Bob,
mediocrity is everywhere.
I fully remember you sucking this year.
yeah, but not
at
quite that hard.
At science and fiction, too.
Jay, enjoy your time in the sun, dude. It's fleeting.
I don't even care, to be honest with you.
Okay, regression to the mean. That's all I got to say.
Well, so how do you think Kara did?
Awesome.
I'm probably next. I'm probably right in the middle, like 50%.
70%.
Jay got 54.3%. Oh, Jay cracked 50%.
Awesome. Nice. Well done,
is
Jay.
That typical?
And that was without any teeth or Thanksgiving science or fiction.
That's
in
there. Right.
That's pretty damn good.
I eked out ahead because Bob sucked ass this year.
Now, Kara, you think you're in the middle of the pack.
Yeah, I thought so.
Kara scored 66.7%.
Wow.
Two-thirds.
I mean, I'll gloat for a minute. Like, I'm not above that. But it's just kind of inflated because, like I said, every time I answer a new question, the needle moves a lot because I just don't have...
It's a smaller data set. Only participated in 21 of the 52 possible.
All right, well, how many plate appearances do you need for it to be official? I guess that's the baseball analogy.
I don't know.
We haven't. We never decided on something like that.
It's all official.
But, you know, I'll take it. I'm the best. I'm not going to complain.
Kara, let's look at it this way. Kara, you had 12 wins or something, right?
14. Jay had the most at 25.
See, all so right. There you go.
Oh, okay.
In that context, yeah. You're, you know.
Yeah, but I only played less than half. So if I kept the same momentum.
I understand.
So we'll see next week. Next week's episode will be the first of a new year. Brand new year. Wipe the slate clean, right, Bob? And you Kara, you'll be there for the full year. And then next year at this time, we'll see what the numbers are.
Everyone now, zero. One question right, and I'm at 100%, baby.
I played in four throughout the year.
And?
50%. I got two of the four correct.
Fitty.
Right.
Fitty. So that put me in the middle of the pack.
Bob, you okay over there?
I know it's an anomaly, so I'm okay.
Right.
It's an anomaly. In other words, it's data. It's not an anomaly. It's data.
What's a new variable here? I'm new. Maybe I'm throwing you off.
Yeah, maybe.
It could be.
Or bad luck or something.
You are so gone. You are so gone if I do this badly next year.
Evan had the longest losing streak at 9.
That was a long losing streak.
Followed by Bob at 8.
Wow, Bob.
Jay had the longest winning streak at 7, followed by Bob at 5.
Yeah, I remember that.
How many times did you guys sweep me?
Three times.
Oh. Several.
Four.
I'd say 8 times.
Nine.
Nice.
Ow. How many times did I sweep you?
21 times.
Five.
10.
7.
8. 8 times.
Oh, so practically.
We win.
That washed out practically.
Yeah, it's pretty very close. Very close, which is good.
Except we win.
That's good.
Kara, congratulations, Kara. Well done.
Kara, you're
Thanks,
awesome.
Thanks, Bob.
You're awesome. Aww. I'm GWC.
So what I do each year, if you recall, Kara, you probably don't recall this.
Nope.
For the review sessions, the wrap-up episodes, Science or Fiction, I revisit science or fiction items from throughout the year.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
So these are three items that you've heard before, so we'll test your memory.
But is this the source amnesia thing where you flip the true and false part?
No, flip it. It's truth amnesia.
No, it's the same. You
I do.
Same.
I may flip them.
Yeah, he's not going to present them exactly the same.
I may turn
not?
A fiction into a science and a science
good
into
know,
a fiction. Yeah.
So
it's like starting
them.
All over again, basically.
Okay, same right, it's that. Like starting all over again if you literally turn your ear off after you get.
I have an idyllic memory. Go ahead.
An idyllic memory? Yes. All right, here we go. So these are three items that you've heard at some point in the year. I'm not going to guarantee, Kara, that you've heard these because they may be from before.
So
your
do I have
tenure.
A handicap on this one?
Yes, you do.
Pretty nice. Much, yeah.
Okay.
Suck it.
That's a good thing.
You have to suck it up. Okay, here we go. Scientists have discovered, this is item number one, by
gotcha,
the way.
Gotcha, we got
item
you.
Number one.
Yep.
Scientists have discovered an organism that has not evolved detectably in over 2 billion years. Item number two, a recent study finds that people tend to get more trusting as they get older. And item number three, a new study changes the estimate for the evolution of eukaryotes from a maximum of 2.8 billion years ago to 3.5 billion years ago, 0.7 billion years earlier than previously thought.
Now, can we confer with each other?
You cannot confer with each other.
Can we confer?
Can we see the questions and you put them on screen?
Yes. So here we go. I don't have them digitally. So Jay,
the old analog
the answers
screen.
There,
that's an
right?
analog screen. It's called.
You want me to go first,
answers
Steve?
Are hidden. Jay, you go first.
All right. So this first one about scientists, that they discovered an organism that has not evolved detectably in over 2 billion years. I believe this one is science because of my ex-wife's mother.
Jesus.
Yes.
so terrible. So, did not land.
It's the perfect venue to take it out on exes and formers and all that.
Ex-mother-in-law.
Yes. Perfect venue for that.
He was 2 billion years old.
So, yeah, I think I remember saying to this news item, what the hell was around 2 billion years ago? And then it's still around today.
That's the essence of the item, yes.
And it's not one of those space bears. What do you call those guys?
Tardigrades?
Water bears.
Water bears, whatever.
Did you call them a base pair?
No, space bears.
They can live in space.
But
they are water bears.
Look, whatever.
Or tardigrades.
Oh, and we had a true that was actually a fiction space on the tardigrades. Water bears?
Yeah. All right, so that one I'm not sure about that one yet. A recent study finds that people tend to get more trusting as they get older. It's either that or it's the opposite of that.
There's the rub, isn't it?
It's a false dichotomy. It could be unchanged.
Yeah, so you're right, Bob. That news item just sucks. Let me read the final one. I'm doing this so everyone can remember what they are.
Thank you, Jay. We appreciate it.
Evan, a new study changes the estimate for the evolution of eukaryotes from a maximum of 2.8 billion years ago to 3.5 billion years ago, a 0.7 billion years earlier than previously.
I did the math for you this time, Evan.
Thank you very much.
Last week I made Evan do the math himself.
I had to get a pencil and paper. It was a
12
mess.
Plus 11 to get 23.
It's late on the East Coast when we record.
I'm going to say that the third one about the 0.7 billion year change, I think that one is the fiction.
Okay. Any particular reason?
Because I'm remembering.
Just memory.
Memory from the show, yes.
Fiction.
Truth amnesia. Right.
Yes.
Bob?
Good luck, Bob.
I have this in the bag.
Nope.
No evolution in 2 billion years for some organism. I mean, I could see like an archaea or some extremophile perhaps.
Maybe a shark.
More trusting as they get older. I'm going to just go with memory, and for some, I'm remembering that one. But it's probably, you know.
Yeah, but you don't know if you
false
remember.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Source amnesia. I get it.
Truth amnesia. You don't care where it came from. You just want to know if it's true or not. It's totally amnesia. Separate. Yeah. Okay.
Did Bob, are you scrolling through your head about all the old people you know? Because it does go kind of against like the, I don't believe nothing.
Get off my lawn.
Yes, get off my lawn meme.
All right, so now we've got eukaryotes so they evolved not 2.8 billion years ago, but 3.5 billion. 3.5 eukaryotic? No, that's fiction.
Okay.
No confidence.
Kara?
No. So funny, because I immediately was like, yeah, I could see eukaryotes evolving earlier. Like, I immediately went to the only one that was fact was the one that you guys said was fiction. And the other two, and then I remembered that there's not two fictions.
just one
me.
Fiction, yeah.
See, we might be at the disadvantage. You might be in the advantage.
Maybe.
Right, you're untainted.
I'm untainted.
Our memories are just messing with us.
Yes.
So scientists discovering an organism that has not evolved detectably in over 2 billion years really messes with my head, because I could see that there would be an organism that is 2 billion years old that has not evolved based on things that we couldn't measure from fossils.
Right.
You know what I mean? From like just morphological changes haven't happened. But if we could actually look at the DNA or the nucleotides that long ago, we would have seen change. I think it's absolutely impossible that there'd be no mutation in 2 billion years. So that one screws me, because it just says detectably in that one word. And then people tend to get more trusting as they get older. You're right. I think that that's one of those things where we want to say that they get less trusting. I think that they become more conservative as they get older, or more moderate. But I'm not sure if that has anything to do with trust. I kind of want to go against the grain, even though I'm afraid you guys are correct with eukaryotes. 3.5 billion years ago is like when the planet started. Like, that's a long time ago. I'm going to be a lemming. I'm going to say that eukaryotes did not evolve that long ago.
Okay. Let's hold hands while we jump off that mountain.
I think we're heading there.
It hurts, you guys. It hurts.
Number two, people tend to get more trusting as they get older. Well, to me, that makes the most sense of the three.
Okay.
When folks are targeted by scammers, they go after who? The elderly. Because
A,
they have money, and B, because they're taking advantage of the fact that, you know, their faculties aren't what they once were. Mm-hmm. So, and I think being more trusting is part of that. So it comes down to these billion year situations here. Was it the organism that didn't evolve, or is it the 0.7 billion years earlier than previously thought? So therefore, sorry, I have to go with the eukaryotes as the fiction. 3.5 billion years ago. That's just too early in Earth's history. Okay.
So there's a sweep on one side or the other.
Yeah, it's just a sweep one way or the other.
Okay, so I guess I'll take this in order. We'll start with number one. Scientists have discovered an organism that has not evolved detectably in over 2 billion years. You guys all think this one is science.
Yes.
How confident are you?
How confident
I'm 33%
confident. I'm 100%
confident.
Operative word science. Being detectably.
Detectably. And that one is... Science. That is science. And yes, the operative word is detectably. So this was this one was as it was in earlier in the year. This is I think from May.
Did you double check?
Yeah, this was.
Oh yeah,
definitely
yeah.
From before me. All
so
of
did
you,
our chances just go? To 50% at this point.
Did they go to 50% or not? No, because no. I choose what to read. I'm not right. Reading them in random order.
You don't get a reveal and then a rechoice. So
I'm not reading them in random order. If I were, then it would.
Yeah,
gotcha.
Right, this is the goat and car problem.
Exactly, which I still don't understand.
Monty Hall. I love the Monty Hall.
It's fantastic.
I'll tell you, Jay.
Don't touch me.
So the guys, does anybody remember the organism?
It's yes.
Totally true.
Eukaryote.
No, it's a prokaryote. For
it's
sure,
a
that's a prokaryote.
It's an anti-karyote.
It is a deep sea sulfur eating bacteria.
Extremophile.
Okay. Yeah, extremophile. Nice.
That's right. I remember that.
Yeah,
deep sea extremophile.
Because we don't have DNA from 2 billion years.
Yeah, we're not measuring. Obviously, we don't have 2 billion year old DNA. Yeah. It's just that the fossils look exactly the same.
But if we did, I can almost guarantee there'd be.
Sure, there'd have to be eukaryotes and ask them. Are you more trusting now that you're more older? We would have solved this whole problem.
You're right.
Those pesky eukaryotes. Okay, a recent study finds that people tend to get more trusting as they get older. You all think this one is science.
We hope it is.
Oh, God.
Any of you remember this one?
Yeah, I remember
vaguely.
I remember it.
You just don't remember what was true.
Precisely, I do not
What if I told you that I flipped this one from what I originally had it when I included it?
I would believe that.
You'd be surprised.
So originally, I flipped it to a recent study finds that people get less trusting as they get older.
But that was the fiction.
And that was the fiction because this
so
one
this
is science.
Science.
Oh. Yes. Yes. This one's science. People do get more trusting than ever, and you're absolutely right. That's why old people are targeted by scammers. Mm-hmm. So because people tend to get more trusting. General trend as they get older.
Jay turns to me, so we won, right?
I flipped it too many times.
You have no idea how tired and out of it I am right now. I'm like, wait, I forget. Bob. Which one did we
pick? You did not lose.
Yeah.
I didn't.
My news item would be you get dumber as you get older.
Or more tired.
Yeah.
So that means that a new study changes the estimate for the evolution of eukaryotes from a maximum of 2.8 billion years ago to 3.5 billion years ago, 0.7 billion years earlier than previously thought, is the fiction. And I also flipped that one.
Yep.
That was a science when I read it originally. You remember what the original science was? So the original news story was that the previous estimate for the age of eukaryotes was 2.8 billion years. But that was revised down.
2.1?
To 1.5.
Oh, wow.
Oh, that's a big reveal.
Because the evidence for eukaryotes 2.8 billion years ago was found to be wrong.
I remember
and
that.
And so the oldest evidence for eukaryotes then resorted to the 1.5 billion year evidence.
Wait.
What is that old
That's
evidence?
A 1.3 billion year
difference. Yeah, 3.5 is kind of pushing it.
Yeah, you know, it's kind of
I mean, there was life of 3.5 billion years.
But not eukaryotic life. It was bacterial. Yeah, it was archaea.
But I bet you things evolved, generally speaking, quicker than we assume. So, Kara, before we go to the quote to close out our final episode of 2015.
Years?
2015, yeah.
2015.
So you've been with us for half a year.
Almost exactly.
Yeah, almost exactly half a year.
And how's that going for you?
It's working.
Yeah,
you think I might stick around.
Yeah,
I'm gonna re-up for next year.
Re-up.
Yeah, so I think you could stay.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Jay and I were talking. Jay and I were talking the day. We were like, "Yeah, she could stay."
Yeah. We'll re-up.
She doesn't know that story.
That's a story unto itself. The "she could stay" comment.
I'm always learning so much.
I know. Well, there's a lot of catch up.
Now
we're a cesspit of
years.
Now I use cromulent almost every day. It embiggens my heart to use the word cromulent.
Yeah, we're getting you there.
There you go.
Yeah, I'm learning.
All right, Evan, final quote of the year.
Final quote of the year. It's short and it's sweet. Those who are serious in ridiculous matters will be ridiculous in serious matters.
Thank
you. I like it.
The wheels are turning.
It's good.
I'm trying to decide if I agree with that or not.
You don't? Those who are serious in ridiculous matters will be ridiculous in serious matters. You think it's too broad?
It's just not. It's a not necessarily is my response.
Yeah.
So you're questioning Cato the Elder?
Cato the Elder.
Cato the Elder.
Who was that?
Famous Roman senator and historian from 2,300 years ago. You're going to question the wisdom of the ancients?
Yes.
That's good.
That's a really old world way of saying, you're an asshole.
Question Cato the Elder.
Cato the Elder.
I want to be something.
Was there a Cato the Younger?
Evan.
Well, thank you guys for spending 2015 with me. It's been a lot of fun.
Great
we had a good year.
That's right.
It
went
very
by very quickly. Carrie, you were an awesome addition to the show. Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Definitely.
Awesome.
Yeah, we're very, very happy.
It's been so much fun.
We love you. We think you're great. This is great. We're so excited that this next year coming up, unburdened by the incredibly expensive lawsuit.
Not fully, right, but
almost.
Almost.
There's a light at the end of the tunnel.
Yeah, there is. Yeah. We're moving forward.
Well, until next year and until next week, this is your Skeptic's Guide to the Universe.
The Skeptic's Guide to the Universe is produced by SGU Productions, dedicated to promoting science and critical thinking. For more information on this and other episodes, please visit our website at theskepticsguide.org, where you will find the show notes as well as links to our blogs, videos, online forum, and other content. You can send us feedback or questions to info@theskepticsguide.org. Also, please consider supporting the SGU by visiting the store page on our website, where you will find merchandise, premium content, and subscription information. Our listeners are what make SGU possible. We'll be right back.